Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm the spiritual leader of this community, and I'm really happy to be here. And it is kind of fun to come back after I've been away. It is such a treat. I went on a, first of all, for my birthday, we always go to that rowdy biker thing in Laughlin. But I did a really unique thing this year. At the end of a few days there, I had Hugh drop me off in Winslow, Arizona, and he left me all alone at the La Posada. And I chose that area because there's nothing there, and that hotel has a restaurant in it, so I would never have to leave the grounds. And, it was lovely. There were no phones in the room, and I never heard a TV the whole time I was there. And, I think I have a new favorite place to go to unwind and be alone and reconnect. And that's important for ministers to do. And so a lot of fabulous stuff has come forward for me that I will be talking to you about in the weeks to come. But today, we're having a look at this idea of you shall know the truth. Interesting, yes? Interesting topic, and you'll notice that I did not say, and the truth will set you free, because I'm saving that part for later. What I want you to really hear is, you shall know the truth. Yeah, and I'm not going to be apologetic about it. You shall know the truth. Today, you're going to know the truth. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to be sure about that. And in addition to knowing the truth today, we're starting a brand new month. And you know what happens when we step into a new month? We have a new CSL theme. So our parent organization, Centers for Spiritual Living, lays out these monthly themes for us. And for the month of May, you want to know what we're looking at for the month of May? Of course. We're looking at spiritual living through creativity. And creativity is a real primary message in this teaching, because we talk about it, we talk about the creative process, we see that we are creative beings, that we are co-creating our own lives all the time with spirit itself. So it's a major component of what it is that we teach and what we look at every Sunday and in every class that we throw here. Or sponsor or teach or facilitate. So the affirmation that CSL has given us to focus on for the month is this. We allow the ongoing activity of spirit into our hearts and our minds and our activities to bring forth new forms and expressions to inspire and guide us. And that's such a lovely quote. That quote was very inspiring for me as I was looking at writing the message and what I really intended to say today. And so hang on, because we're going to dive deep in looking at that idea of what it means to know the truth. I think the important thing to understand at the beginning here, especially as we're easing our way from creativity into this idea of truth, is that there's this divine life that's already in us, and it's alive, and it's active, and it's greater than we are, it's more powerful than we are as individuals, and that we live in this universe where that power is not only supporting us and guiding us and directing us, but that we are always reminded to sort of tap into that power, to use it in a practical way. And that's why we call this idea of spiritual living a practical spirituality. That's why we have been looking at all year, we'll keep looking at this idea of spiritual living through all these 12 themes for the year. So God in us, sometimes we say God in us, expressing through us or even as us, is that activity of life that is everything. And it's divine, and it's a part of who we are. And so this is the area that I really want to focus on, because, just think about that. God as that infinite spirit, the Holy Spirit itself, the infinite intelligence of all the universe is alive in us and active in us as we're having this day-to-day experience of living. So the spiritual path, once we begin to wrap our mind around those possibilities of the divine wisdom in our body and in our relationships and in every part of life, as we begin to play with that and apply it in a practical way, what we see is that all of this, all of the spiritual teachings are not only, you know, I love that we say that every day, that we honor all paths to God, because what we know is what our founder, Ernest Holmes, said is that there is a thread of truth in all faiths, and they are just woven together, and so that we see a little bit of it in every culture, in every religious or spiritual tradition. So what we're doing with spiritual study and looking at applying spiritual truth in our life is we are actually looking to stabilize the basic structures, the basic life structures. We say that sometimes. This is about stabilizing the basic life structures. What does that mean? Well, that means that we're stabilizing all the areas of our life in a higher way. It's not just about personal growth. It's about understanding a greater spiritual truth that none of our life can be separate from that spiritual essence of who we are. So the life structures that we always look at again and again are like things like health, our general well-being, our emotional health, our relationships. How healthy are your relationships? What about your finances? Those are basic life structures. This is the things that we live in our world, and we could then carry it out to the less obvious, but more in terms of divine characteristics, that we're stabilizing our life structure in love and in joy and in peace and beauty and harmony, because those are the God qualities. And those are the structures that we talk about again and again, because that is the way we can use this teaching even when we leave here this afternoon, even as we step into the next room after the message. So each of us is busy, if we're doing this well, even if you're not doing it well, we're all busy all the time creating our own life and our own experiences. And what we try and remember each week is that we have choice. So if you're living your life out of habit, well, you're going to get the same old thing that you've always gotten from doing the same old stuff. So we rejuvenate this idea of creating a reality that we desire to experience and not being so bounced around by the world. So I would say, as I was playing with these ideas, I was thinking, you know, what we're doing is we're cultivating a consciousness. So your consciousness is like what you believe. So we're cultivating a consciousness that encourages sort of joyous expectation. We're creating thoughts and ideas that encourage us to see a bigger picture other than just the life that we've lived so far. So the title of the message is, You Shall Know the Truth, but we are not going to define what truth is. I'm not looking at that today. I'm not interested in the definition. I'm not interested in sharing my interpretation of what truth is with you. I want you to be thinking about what your truth is, because you shall know it, and you got it already. And sometimes we just have to look at the things that get in the way from us being able to recognize it. So one of the things I love about what we do on Sundays is we don't give a big long list of do's and don'ts. You know, we don't have any really, a couple weeks ago, I think, I gave a talk on rewriting the Ten Commandments. That kind of stuff is fun for me, because we're not talking doctrine, and we're not even talking about some preacher woman's personal opinion. We're really talking about truth. And the thing about truth is that you shall know it, because it's the only version of truth that's ever going to be any good to you. So we have different ideas of what that looks like, and that's okay. It doesn't matter. What matters is that we're using it in our own life. I love those three words. Three words. You shall know. You shall know. It almost calls for a little foot stomp in there. You shall know. I love those words because what's that? What that's saying is, as I mentioned at the top of this message, I'm not giving you a sweet little invitation that if you want to play in this later, if you want to dabble in it, what I'm saying is you shall know it. This is a command. This is a demand. I am standing here in my full ministerial authority, demanding that you hear it as a very profound command, a pronouncement, if you will. Because what it means is there's something to know. There's something here to know. And this thing called life, this intelligence that's embedded in every cell of our being and certainly in our minds, this intelligence desires for us to recognize it, to know it, and I think the only purpose that we're here is to align ourselves to it and to awaken to that idea that there's more than flesh and blood. There's more than what's going on in this physical world that we can see and know in the physical way. So we're looking for a deeper knowing, and you can only find that as you're willing to turn within. It's an indefinable truth that actually cannot be put to words, and yet we're always trying to do that, aren't we? We're always trying to put it into words, and I think when we do that, we make it smaller than what it is. So we can only know it. We can't describe it. Now, I did my due diligence this week, and I looked up the passage in the Bible book of John. Chapter 8, verse 32, and I looked at the context of how that all came to be, and I want to tell you about it because I discovered a couple of very interesting things that all of us can use. In the Bible book of John, where it says, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free," Jesus is talking to the Pharisees. And you may remember, I think a couple weeks ago, I was talking about how the Pharisees were the scholars. They were the religious authorities of the day, and they weren't really sure about Jesus because he came with a lot of authority that seemed to overstep their ideas, and they were curious and probably a little nervous about him. And the part in the book of John where this "you shall know the truth" comes from is the same place where Jesus is talking about being the light. So the Pharisees are asking him a bunch of questions as though they're trying to trip him up, and Jesus says to them, I'm the light. I am the light. And when you figure out that I've come here to show you this example, when you mimic this life I've demonstrated, this example I've come to show you, when you imitate that, you too will know the light. And in that way, you will never stumble in the darkness. So we see that we're right there at that chapter where the Pharisees are questioning him, and the Pharisees said, "But why should we believe you? You know, we don't even know you. You're bringing us these words. All we have, in fact, is your word. And so, tell us why we should believe that what you say has some validity to it here." And Jesus said to them, it's almost like you can hear a little attitude. You can almost hear like he's stomping his foot and coming, showing up with his authority. And he says to the Pharisees, he said, "You know, your problem is that you keep deciding according to what you can see and what you can touch. But there's more. Your understanding is too small. I'm speaking of that which is beyond what you can see," he said. He says, "You are missing God in all of this. You're missing the whole point. You're missing the Father. You're missing the Creator. You're missing this whole point of what I keep saying, that the Father and I are one, that there is that the inner light. You're missing the whole point." And why? Because we think too small. See, we want to listen to these little passages, these little lines, because I think there's some valid information for us, because most of us, in my opinion, most of us live our lives too small. And we do put a lot of credibility on the things that we can see and the things that we can touch. So Jesus now, who probably was a little frustrated with the Pharisees questioning him like that, Jesus turns to the people. He turns to the Jews and he says, listen up here, people. He didn't really say that. I mean, he may have, who knows? He says, it's so fun to have more. Truly, I say to you. No, I like my version better. So he turns to the Jews. Now, keep in mind that he's probably speaking to a group of Jews who were following him, who believed in him, who were getting excited about the message because it was he wasn't new anymore. And he then says to the people, if you follow my example, this way of life that I've been living, then you are my disciples, and then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Okay, now listen to how Eugene Peterson took that same biblical passage and paraphrased it, because I think there's something very important for us here. Eugene Peterson in the, thank you whoever purchased the Bible and left it on the table. There's a message out there on the study table now. Was that you, Mr. Mark? Dora did it. Thank you, Dora. You're going to want to look at John, the 8th chapter, if you want to look it up after we're done here. But Eugene Peterson takes that same sentence. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. But Peterson says this. Then you will experience for yourself the truth, and it will free you. You will experience for yourself the truth. Now we're talking in a way that I understand. I say very frequently that I can stand here every Sunday and give these messages with some real high points in them, but I can't give it to you and you can't take it in intellectually and consider that an embodiment. You have to create your own experience around all of this because that's the only place you have an encounter with truth in your own life through your own experience. So I love that. Follow my example and then you will experience for yourself the truth and that is what will set you free. The people were stunned. The Jewish people didn't understand this, and they said to Jesus, but we are descendants of Abraham. We're not slaves to anybody. How could the truth possibly free us? And then Jesus said the key point. This is what we can take home right away. It can free you from your sin, from your error thinking, from the way you don't quite hit the mark exactly, the way we have some error thoughts, the way we have misjudgments. He said, these things enslave you. And when we are enslaved by our beliefs, by our judgments, by our errors, then they are controlling us. And the problem with that is that then as we believe it, those things then dictate how we live our life. And they dictate how our activities unfold because we have belief around it. So there's something so valuable for us here to look at. What do you need to be free from? Well, we want to be free from those beliefs that are holding us back, that aren't serving us, that are causing us to live our life too small. He says we're missing the mark, that there's something so much bigger that you can't touch, you can't see it, you can't taste it, but you can know it. Now, here's another part of this message that really struck me powerfully while I was putting this all together. And I want to say this, and I'm inviting you to hear it. God did not create us to be enslaved. God did not create us to be enslaved. So, you know, this is the time to ask yourself, what is it that I am enslaved to? How have I limited my thinking in my own life? Because when you know the truth, that truth that can only be experienced, when you know that truth, you will never be enslaved again. See, when we pull away from that truth, what happens is it's like we remove ourselves from that circle of wholeness. So that stained glass behind me, that is our teaching symbol. Whenever we're teaching that, we're demonstrating how you can use the steps to that teaching symbol in our own life, how we can create, we call that the creative process, how we can create a better life for ourselves. The first thing we do is draw the circle, right? We draw the circle, and then what do we say that is? God. And that God is all. It's just a symbol, right? But it's God is all, and therefore nothing can exist outside of that circle. And yet, we constantly put ourselves outside of that circle. We forget the truth of our being, and we begin to believe that we could be separated from God, that we could be separated from our good. The truth, in whatever way you will interpret it for yourself, has to be then about knowing the fundamental goodness of this universe, the fundamental perfection of life that desires to be expressed at a higher level than we remember. So the story of Jesus, if you look at it that way, the story of Jesus is not a Christian story. It's about the Christ, you know, nobody owns it, and nobody should be shy of it, whether or not you believe that Jesus was a great teacher, that, you know, no matter what you believe, you get to have all your beliefs that serve you. So nobody is ever trying to take our religious roots away. We just want to complement whatever it is we've been taught and that we believe in a spiritual or religious way, and in a way that will allow us to see the presence of good. And I believe that this story of Jesus is profoundly useful for us, because it sort of redeems us from the myth of original sin. See, there's no original sin. There might be some original ignorance where we start believing that we're less than. You know, it is not humble to believe that you are less than. A lot of us have taken on humility to believe that we need to be less than we are, and I'm here to tell you that is not what humility is. I was in the La Posada reading and studying and praying and visioning for my ministry, and I read this profound line. I can't even tell you where I read it, but it said, true humility is a combination of meekness with confidence. So there's a way for us to stand in our power and to own that, and to be meek, and we bring a whole new idea of what humility is, of what humbleness is about. It is not about making your life smaller, or it is not about not having dreams, and it certainly is about being willing to tap into that higher consciousness that invites us to see and live larger than we have been living. Any of the work we do, whether it's just a personal growth class or some kind of spiritual study, anything we do that enhances our self-esteem or our self-worth or our self-acceptance, ultimately our self-love, these things are all an important part of how we rise in consciousness to recognize how blessed our lives are. And when we rise in consciousness and we begin to recognize our blessings, if you look at the blessed, inspired, and grateful right there on the wall, then what we see is that we are blessed. that we are born of inspiration. It is the divine breath that has breathed us into being. And when you know that, when you have even a brief moment of getting that, and you can feel that in you, then there's that recognition which becomes gratitude. You have no choice but to be absolutely grateful, to be filled with thankfulness for the life that has been given, the way that God is constantly pouring grace into our own lives. And then I think of the symbol, then that awareness then opens me to almost look like that V of the symbol where your hands are up and you become like a funnel or a vessel, so that as that grace is pouring into our lives, we then catch it and then we change and we stabilize those life structures. We change our life because we realize, like Jesus said, there's more than meets the eye here. You've only been looking at what could be seen and what could be touched, but there's more. So when we have those moments of connection where we get that we are in the circle, that we are absolutely one with all of life and certainly cannot be separated from that essence of God that is life itself. No life could be separated from that. That's the intelligence that breathes us and pumps our blood and circulates everything in the proper way it needs to be circulating. Then when we are vibrating at that kind of energetic, that divine energetic that is absolutely pure. It is about our perfection. As we begin to think about it, we show up differently, and then we stabilize all of our life structures. Our health improves. Our relationships improve, our finances improve, our friendships become richer and more beautiful, our loved ones, our connection with our loved ones is enriched in every way, because we live in this universe and it is good and it is for us. And the whole point of us being here is to have those experiences. Emma Curtis Hopkins, there is a good for me and I ought to have it. There is a good for me, and I ought to have it. Let's do it together. There is a good for me, and I ought to have it. Man. And I have it. When we really get that, because I could feel it, you know, as we built to that. Boy, you can feel that inside of you. Then we begin to see that our source of good is not out there somewhere. You're never going to get it from another human being or any other source. But what we do is, as we love each other and we recognize our own love, we become awake again and aware of that truth that's right there. There's a Sufi saying that says this. This cracked me up. Oh man, if you only knew your freedom, it is your ignorance of your freedom that is your captivity. Right? It is. It's just when we forget that we already are free. I found this great word also while I was away, and I also don't remember where it came from, so I guess I don't have to credit anybody. Obscurations. Let me see if I said it right. Obscurations. I looked it up. It's a real word. Obscurations are what happens. Something gets in our way that obscures the truth from us. And we then believe in that which gets in the way more than the actual truth. So obscurations, you might say, cover our original truth. Organically, innately, we are already perfect just the way we are. We don't have to do anything to be better. And that would be really good news. Unless you're a perfectionist. Ooh, there are too many. Look, I see a bunch of you going, oh, guilty. Perfectionism, according to Brené Brown, is one of our biggest dilemmas in the lives we lead today. Perfectionism is where we have decided that life needs to look a certain way. And it's almost, as I was thinking about it, I didn't look it up, but I was thinking it's almost like we get addicted to symmetry and order, and that when things don't fit in that idea of what perfect in the outside world looks like, then we get crazed and all we can focus on is the imperfection. Really, probably right now in this room, somebody is looking at a piece of lint on the back of the shirt of the person in front of you, and it's making you crazy. You know what I mean? There's those things. You know, I just notice when I'm when I'm square and I know who I am and I know my place in the universe, then things look gorgeous to me. But if I'm having an off day, then every little thing in my house looks like it needs a little adjusting or a little change or a new coat of paint. I can't see because I'm focused on what seems wrong. And when we spend our time focusing on what seems wrong, there is a point where it will skew our perception. You know what Brené Brown says? Brené Brown is an amazing, if you haven't seen any of her YouTubes, I urge you to treat yourself to see what she has to say about the gifts of imperfection. And her whole point is that perfectionism comes from our lack of willingness to be vulnerable. And if we're not willing to be vulnerable, we're not living our lives as authentically as we could. And for me, that's a big one. I want to live my life as authentically as I can, for as long as I can, for as long as I'm in this body. That is one of my goals. Osho, how many of you have heard of Osho? Osho is an Indian, sort of a guru, a spiritual teacher, born in 1931, and he grew up questioning religions and cultural norms. Now imagine that, you live in India during the caste system. He opposed all of that, but he said this I thought was a gorgeous quote. "This existence is ready to support you in every possible way. Trust, and you will feel a new upsurge of energy in you, and that energy is love." See, when we're looking at our imperfections, we're squelching that awareness of love. We just can't quite tap into it. We can't see it. But he's giving us this invitation to just trust, to feel it, to create an environment, a consciousness, to cultivate a consciousness where there's an upsurge of that essence of love within us. In the Upanishads, the ancient Hindu text, sacred text, it says, "The mind is indeed a source of bondage, but it is also a source of liberation." The mind, what we think, what we believe, the choices we make, it can be the bondage or it can be that source of limitation. So know the truth. I'm not asking, I am demanding that you create a space today to know the truth. And maybe that's going to require that we get quiet for a little while each day, because the truth never comes in the chaos. It's there. But to know the truth that the scriptures talk about, to know that truth, that mind, that existence, as Osho called it, that is to sit sweetly and just to know that something's calling you. Something's calling you a little bit deeper than you've ever been before. So think about it this week. What do you want to be free of? And listen. Listen so that you can be clear about truth as you understand it, but leave room to grow too. So let's take a moment to ground all of these ideas, to get anchored in a greater sense of truth than ever before. So just get comfortable where you're seated.